Today's show, Jim Harbaugh departs. Sherrone Moore takes over. What can he do to keep Michigan going? What about the NCAA? Can they punish Michigan and how hard will they try? Plus, hate speech. It's college sports. Maybe.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Come on, Urban. Come back. We need you. Come on, Urban. We won't even bring up that blonde at the bar. I won't even mention it. If you return, I won't mention it.
Russ Dellinger.
Yes, he's young. Yes, he's never been a head coach. Yes, he's only been a coordinator for a couple of years. But it would have been hard, I think, on the team to go any other direction.
And SI's Pat Forte.
It's pretty impressive that somehow poor little old Texas, fragile, tiny, impoverished, you know, humble Texas, now is like an endangered species.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And Jim Harbaugh has left us. Not really breaking news. That happened late last week, right as our last pod came out.
Yeah. Pod drops, Jim leaves.
Yeah.
He burned us there.
Come on, Jim. Come on. Be better. He wasn't thinking of the pod. And I really believe that if everyone in America thought first and foremost about the pod, we would be a better country.
100%.
And so Jim did not do that for us. His record, it's hard to say. It's like 86-25 if you don't count all the games he was suspended. I think it was 90-25. I hate NCAA records. I don't know what's real. I know this. They went 15-0 and just won the national title. They were 40-3 the last three seasons, three playoff appearances, three Big Ten titles. Wild tenure at Michigan. Kind of an epic nine-year run. No lack of news. I'm going to miss Jim Harbaugh the way I miss Urban Meyer. He was great content for no other reason than the guy was always up to something. And we like something.
Yes.
But he is off to the Chargers. There was all sorts of, well, what if they had gotten a contract to him sooner? What if that guy was leaving for the NFL when he could leave for the NFL? And any other spin on that is just, it wasn't happening. He wants to be in the NFL, and now that is my theory. We'll get to Sherrone Moore, but any quick thoughts on the tenure that Harbaugh?
Many thoughts. I don't even know if they're going to be that quick, but yes, he will be missed by the podcast. He will be missed from a columnist standpoint. He came in ready to kind of break the mold in a lot of ways and proceeded to do so and kept doing so and kept doing so and kept doing so. You know, he turned recruiting on its ear. He had satellite camps. He had sleepovers. He had crazy comments. He made Michigan better immediately, but then didn't make them good enough. And then backslid and then nearly got fired and then turned everything around dramatically after nearly getting fired. And maybe that's when Connor Stallions kicked into gear. But 2021, 2022, 2023 were fantastic years for Michigan. And then capping it off with the national championship and all kinds of drama attendant to that. Coached 9 of the 15 games, 6 of them he was elsewhere watching someone else do the coaching. You know, I mean, just a fascinating personality. And the column I wrote about him, one line that I had people that know Jim well pointed out they thought they liked was apropos was when I said he's a cultivator of conflict, that he found some fights and they helped energize him, helped kind of invigorate him. One of the obviously coach third base he went after. And went after the SEC at some points. I mean, he was not afraid of stirring it up with people, and it seemed to help him and made things much more interesting. So he will absolutely be missed. He'll probably go win a Super Bowl if he stays long enough at the Chargers. Got Justin Herbert if they put some other pieces there. because he's a really good coach and he came close to winning one before. So I will watch him with interest on that level, and I will miss him on the college level.
Yeah, very jealous of the NFL writers who get to cover him again because he does produce content up into the last news conference in college, right? The one where he the last several of his news conferences, including at media day of the college football playoff championship game, about revenue sharing, you know, with college athletes. So up until the very last tick, he produced really, really good content for all of us. And he's such a, you know, in a profession, in a field of coaches that are, you know, kind of stodgy and not necessarily real colorful and often full of cliches, right? Or just afraid to talk publicly. Jim was not that way, and or is not that way. And he was refreshing in a lot of ways. I think others would maybe, especially those in Indianapolis, might describe him as disingenuous in a lot of ways as well. It's amazing. And Pat just, I won't go through it all again. Pat just went through from year one to whatever year nine of his tenure. And it was, it just ran the gamut of things he said and did and how he was almost fired and then won a championship. It was an incredibly memorable run. It was certainly, I don't even know who to compare it to. Maybe some of Urban Meyer's like tenure at Florida or something, you know, kind of comes to mind. But as far as news making, and what he said, and then what his teams did or didn't do on the field.
A couple of my favorite off the field stuff was the time he did the sleepover with Quinn Norland, the kicker. Yeah. So he found in the rule book that didn't say how long a home visit could last. There's not a 13.1.1. 4 hour max. You can stay as long as you want once they let you in the house. So he decided to do the sleepover, and that was funny, weird but funny. But maybe my favorite part was across the street from the Norlands, where Michigan State fans lived, and so they built a sign in the front of their house when they heard that he was coming for the sleepover, and it said, "Welcome, Coach Harbaugh." This is a big sign. And it said it was the 2015 Michigan State Michigan game, MSU 27, Michigan 23, go green, go white, to taunt Harbaugh. And Harbaugh took a picture, put it out on Twitter, and said, "I respect the preparation." And I believe that. I believe he did. That and how angry everyone got at the satellite camps.
Oh,
he was right about that. I mean, they ended up passing NCAA legislation quicker than you could ever believe. I mean, he was holding these camps in these towns saying, anybody who wants to come and you show up for a day, we'll do a free football clinic, or it's $10 or something like that. And we'll teach you some football. And obviously he's there to identify hidden gems, but I don't know that he ever found any. But I mean, they did one in Australia. I mean, they were all over, but they were all over the South. And it was sort of this Harbaugh thing of like, let's just coach some ball. And look, kids in the towns were like, I mean, I know it's a recruiting gimmick, but if you're just some kid in the town, you're like, Jim Harbaugh and his staff are coming to teach me some football. Like, $10? Like, this is great, right? Like, if you're just a high school kid, you're like, all right.
I enjoyed the Jim Harbaugh satellite camp.
Did you go?
I went to one at Old Dominion.
That is
tremendous.
Look at there.
You were a Harbaugh satellite camper. Let's hear it.
I was in a terribly ill-fitting ODU kind of practice penny. I did terribly in the drills, got beaten one-on-ones. But the big man was there kind of watching the skill players. I mean, there's talent down in Southern Virginia. So it made sense for him to go check it out.
Harbaugh was there.
Yeah.
Did he talk to you, like address the campers?
Oh, I can't remember. I was miserable. I think I just got beasted by a 330-pound nose tackle at a Newport News. I was feeling bad.
Well, you did get to play at Rhode Island. You got to play FCS. So, you know, you are better than the rest of them. There you go, right? You heard about it and you decided to go?
I think he also did a camp, a joint camp at Rhode Island while I was there.
Yeah.
Really? I was told by some of the other players that were working there, the only line that he said to the campers was, "All right, everybody, have fun. Try not to get hurt."
There you go.
And then that was it.
Hey, yeah, it's not a big speech thing. Let's just play some football.
Let's play some football. And by the way, was he there like to see Mike Sainra still or something? I'm wondering, you know, like what was the draw to New England?
Oh, he's looking for players. You never know.
Yeah, right.
Nobody
he
thought
did a lot of the South,
the North Shore of Boston would pretty give him Sainra still. And there it was, you know, I don't know. Right. So when you first heard about it, why did you go, Sean?
There was just interest from the high school coaches around me, and they saw a big camp with Michigan going, so everybody that was on my team basically got in buses or vans and went to ODU however they could to try to get recruited.
So I had no idea about this. So was it a good experience? It was just something to do.
There was a lot of dudes out there trying to learn football and play football.
But
I mean, there were drills. It was organized, about as organized as it could be.
Yeah.
And you learned some stuff, then you learned if you were a dude or if you were not a dude. It was definitely an interesting experience.
There you go. And they banned it because all the coaches got angry that this was somehow.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They all started doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all.
And I never, Oklahoma State was having camps at Mary Hardin Baylor in Texas. Oh, yeah.
They said you could only do it in your own state. And then the colleges started partnering. So they got like Mary Hardin Baylor to run a camp. And then the Oklahoma coaches were brought in as extra.
Yeah.
So, of course, the kids were pouring out for Oklahoma, not Mary Hardin Baylor. No offense.
I remember Harbaugh came to, it was either New Orleans, he did a camp, or Houston maybe. And like everybody was so rattled. You know, at the time I was covering LSU, and like the whole South was rattled by Harbaugh. Yeah. Harbaugh's presence, and so they all started doing these camps.
Yeah.
I remember LSU partnered with like everybody in state, you know, Tulane and UL or whatever, and we're doing these camps around the state of Louisiana. It was wild.
One of the classic college sports panic reaction.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's going to get an advantage. We got to do something. And then, you know, everybody got to have their own camps.
Then they all canceled. Then they banned them. Like nothing bad was happening. Kids were practicing football in a field somewhere.
Kids like Sean were able to see if they were dudes or not.
That's
and
right.
They got rid of the whole thing. What the hell, NCAA?
Sean went home and started studying.
Sean's dude check. Yeah. Sean's dude check didn't go too well, but. Yeah, we got a chance to go.
But at least he checked, you know, his dude or whatever.
Get a T-shirt out of it or anything?
I did. I think I still have it.
There you go.
That's beautiful.
See, this is it. I don't know. We're gonna miss him, but
it's a great example of like
the
him.
Panic.
It's a window into Jim Harbaugh. Like just to encapsulate him is him doing this to kind of rile up everybody. Right, and put the brand out there and then cause the NCAA itself friction to change rules. Like that's, you know, that's what he, agent of chaos, huh?
Agent of chaos. But it's also a sign of how all they do is panic and scream about stuff. They're really isn't that important. I mean, that was truly, we did not need like, all the legislation that can't get passed, and they got that one passed really quickly. Like they're always, coaches are always screaming that something horrible is happening.
Yes.
I know of no story where Jim Harbaugh unearthed some star player. Maybe he got somebody from one of these camps, but it wasn't like all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, this is where I got Aiden Hutchinson and Hassan Haskins and Will Johnson. No, those guys were already recruits. So who knows? Anyway. Sean Gary, he gave the valedictorian. We got to find that speech. He gave the valedictorian speech, I think, at like Paramus Catholic or something like that. Like, that thing's got to be a gold mine. I got to look that up. All right, let's get past Harbaugh. We should do a whole Harbaugh retrospective when feelings.
We could.
People are still up on their emotions about Harbaugh, but he was great for college football. I'm sorry, he was. And
well,
again,
people
go ahead.
People are freshly up in their feelings because he's taken staff with him now to the NFL. Mm, and the Michigan people are like, we could deal with Jim going, but we don't want Jim taking people with him, including Jesse Minter, the DC, and looks like Ben Herbert, the strength coach, and we'll see if there's others.
He may send some back, though. One thing hiring Sharon Moore, he said, I want to be Michigan West out there. One very small or maybe overlooked advantage Michigan had of late was the way they worked kind of hand in hand with the Ravens and sent staffers and I think intelligence and how the game, you know, Mike McDonald, there's a very defensive coordinator at the Ravens, may become a head coach this year in the NFL. He was a promising staffer at Baltimore. He gets shipped to Michigan to be the DC, does great there, goes back to Baltimore. Like, I don't know if that will continue, but if one thing that could help Sharon Moore is if he remains the sort of farm system of coaching talent and scouting talent for the Ravens and the Chargers. So I wouldn't get too mad at Jim. He may help you out with some other guys that no other school kind of has, but that's what's out there. Okay. Sharon Moore, 37 years old, 4-0 as a head coach. In various Harbaugh suspensions. He himself got suspended this year, one game, as part of the not a cheeseburger story. Mm-hmm. Of course.
I wonder what more is coming.
Well, we're going to get to that. I want to talk about the penalties, if there are any coming, or whether there are coming, but what they mean. Michigan did not interview anybody. I mean, I think kind of, a Brian Kelly thing, I don't know what that was. I don't know who was starting that, but that was never happening. There was a better chance of Eli Drinkwitz stepping in there or some kind of real wild card out of the NFL or something. But they wanted Sharon Moore. They keep Sharon Moore. Your thoughts on Sharon Moore, Pat?
You know what? Why wouldn't you give him the job? Stepped in to some big spots and performed extremely well. You know, very much part and parcel of the Harbaugh system and the way that Harbaugh built the program. And then, you know, to be the guy calling the plays, and I thought called a brilliant game against Ohio State and called the game, stepped into the breach against Penn State and then the Maryland game too. That I think this was a slam dunk, no doubt, or once he passed those tests, I don't think there was any likelihood they were going to go elsewhere and go outside of the family and go outside of Sharon Moore. So, you know, we'll see how it goes now with him stepping into massive shoes there. I said that in a way this could actually be harder than replacing Nick Saban just from this standpoint. Is Alabama wins national championships, period. That's what they do. That's what they did under Bear Bryant. It's what they did under Gene Stallings. That's what they've done under Nick Saban. Michigan, not so much. One share of a title in the last 75 years between Harbaugh in 23 and Benny Oosterbaugh in 1948. So you're not stepping into a place that seems to automatically regenerate itself. They win a lot of games. They play at a high level. I don't think that's going to change. But can you still win national titles? That's going to be the challenge. Now, significant, a blue blood hired a black coach who did not have previous head coaching experience. I think it's a very significant thing for Michigan to have done so. According to my count, and I haven't triple checked this, but I've gone through it pretty carefully. Out of 66, 67 power conference teams, that does not count Washington State or Oregon State. Sorry, guys. It does count Notre Dame. Less than half still have hired a black head coach in their history. 32 out of 30 out of 67. More than half of the SEC has not. Exactly half of the Big Ten has not. Exactly half of the ACC has not. Exactly half of the Big 12 has not. So these opportunities don't come around very often. And especially to promote somebody from within who has not had a chance to build up a resume elsewhere, I think is a pretty significant thing in terms of trying to create greater diversity in the coaching ranks in college football at a place like Michigan. When Michigan does it, that says something.
Yeah, and I think Pat, you had a great point about this isn't the Alabama job, where Alabama for so long, no matter who the head coach is won national championships and gotten incredible players. It's a little different at Michigan, and the task is a little taller. But it would have been, I think, incredibly difficult on the team if they would have opened it up and interviewed people. I mean, you saw players immediately after Jim Harbaugh left, you know, post to social media, Sharon's time, Papa Moore's time, you know, no interviews needed. You saw a lot of that. And I think I covered the couple of their games, Penn State and Maryland, and was right there on the sideline next to Sharon on a lot of those, walked out of the Penn State press conference kind of with him down the stairs, down to the locker room. And like, it's not just the players that really kind of embraced him, and especially when he kind of let his emotions out, which he did quite a bit last season. But I remember the fans at the Penn State game, like, lingered around to watch him leave the press conference and to, like, you know, yell supportive stuff at his direction and all that. I mean, yes, he's young. Yes, he's never been a head coach. Yes, he's only been a coordinator for a couple of years. But it would have been hard, I think, on the team to go any other direction for Ward Manuel.
Yeah, that was what they went with. We'll see how long of a leash he gets. We'll see how he does. There are great expectations. There are some advantages. You don't have to go 12-0. Everything doesn't boil down to the Ohio State game anymore. You can make the playoffs. There is still a lot of talent on the roster. I don't know. It's a whole different deal. We'll see a lot on that. I was talking to David Jones, who covered the Big Ten for so long out of Harrisburg. And it's not Penn Live. Is it PA Live? What is it?
I think it is Penn Live.
Penn Live.
Anyway, he's covered the Big Ten football for literally decades. About to retire. Great, great writer. And yep. He was like, you know, Moore sounds, he sounded a little bit like in David's idea, and I kind of agree, like a worker bee, right? He's still in that worker bee mode. Can he get to be the head coach? And that's just sounding, who knows how they sound with the players, but he pointed out, like, that was Lloyd Carr too. Lloyd Carr was a guy who never thought he'd be a head coach and then became the head coach because he got thrown into the, Gary Moeller had to get fired, and there was a whole thing there, and all of a sudden, Lloyd Carr was a great head coach, right? Won a share of the national title and handled it well. So Carr was older than Moore. I mean, that there's two other things. You bring up, he's an African-American. I thought it was kind of interesting and probably good. That really not a big deal was made of that.
No.
Like, it was not this big story, which I actually think is the best sign of progress we could have, is it isn't like this unbelievable, oh my goodness, like, good, right? This is the top guy. This is the guy they all wanted. Okay. It is a thing, but it's not the thing. He's also just young and no experience. Yeah. That's really,
yeah,
to me, you're 37 and you've never been the head coach. This is Michigan. Like,
you could argue this is a coach third base situation. Could you not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's definitely just showed up on third base. The point of that comment, though, was not there were people who are on third base and think they hit a triple. That right. was the burn.
Right.
Because he was, Ryan Day had said, I'm going to hang 100 on Michigan. And Harbaugh felt like, worked my entire life in football. I played, you know, some respect, or who knows what he thought, but it was, I took over Urban Meyer's program and I'm the greatest coach on earth. So we'll see how Sharon Moore walks around. Like, I'm Michigan football, or does Sharon Moore walk around like I'm a coach at that? So he is born on third base, but does he act like he hit a triple, or right. does he sit there and go, man, am I lucky? I got a hell of an opportunity. So I will give it that. How he'll
it's just
do?
Just interesting. Ryan Day was 39 when he got the Ohio State job. Sharon Moore, with now head coaching experience, Sharon Moore 37. So from that standpoint,
very similar in that. Years. It's yeah. it's I guess the attitude they're projecting. Does Ryan Day really act that way? I don't know. I don't think that. But this is Harbaugh.
This is cultivator of conflict.
This is why we like him. Causes this trouble that we can talk about. Come on, Urban, come back. We need you. Come on, Urban. We won't even bring up. We won't even bring up with that blonde at the bar. I won't even mention it. If you return, I won't mention it.
Yeah, there we go. That's a
for the
very
first month.
Generous offer of.
Come on, come on back. We need something going on around here. I don't think Sharon Moore is going to be nearly as exciting.
No,
he seems like
no,
a nice guy. He's like that's that looks like I wish that guy was my neighbor. Although Harbaugh was good too. He'd pick up like, you know, he's got chickens. I don't want to live next to a guy with chickens in his yard.
Can you relocate the chickens to Los Angeles? It seems like it might be a tough move for them, for the chickens.
I don't know what's going to happen to the chickens. I'm concerned
about the chickens.
We'll find out.
Leave him for Sharon. Pass on the chickens.
Maybe. Yeah, right.
He's got enough things to do. Okay, here's the thing about Sharon Moore, and this is one thing I would say. Usually they go with these. You promote the assistant when you have a guy who's the program's operating at maximum capacity, right? And this is kind of the challenge that like Kalen DeBoer has or something like that. You succeed Nick Saban and Nick Saban's, they're recruiting at the best. They're coaching at the best. They're developing at the best. The culture's the best. They're winning at pretty much the best. Everything's the best. And so a lot of times you promote the assistant in an effort to try to maintain that, right? Villanova basketball, North Carolina, you see it all over, right? And the hard part for the next guy is how much can you maintain? Because you can't really do better. Michigan can't do better than what it just did.
Right.
If the formula is, are you going to be Harbaugh? No. That's not an insult. This guy's, there's nobody else. There's only a couple coaches that have ever won a college national championship and also coached in the Super Bowl or won it. And one was Pete Carroll, and there aren't a whole lot of others. Are there anyone else?
I don't think nobody comes to mind.
Most of the college coaches completely suck in the NFL.
Right.
And always have. Dating back to Lou Holtz, but like Spurrier and whatever, Saban and Urban, and I mean these are the elites of the elite. They couldn't get it done.
Petrino.
God, yeah, I forgot about that one. I mean, some of them just—it's a joke.
So it didn't last long.
Jim Harbaugh is a uniquely talented guy, and you can't be Jim Harbaugh. You can't even. All right? But what Sharon Moore can do, and this is what I think is interesting for Michigan, is Sharon Moore can modernize the recruiting process for Michigan, and there is growth there. And normally when you take over a national championship program, there's no room for growth. There's only room for regression because the team made it to 15-0. But Harbaugh won not by loading up with more talent and then coaching them up and winning like pretty much every other national champion we've seen in the last 20 years. His eight, not counting his first year where he had the 50th best recruiting class because he kind of came in late, his eight classes at Michigan ranked 11.25 in the rivals rankings. 11th. He only cracked the top five twice, and they're pretty similar with 24/7 and all the others. And that was in 15 and 16. He won the national championship by getting a whole bunch of really good players, and obviously they had the talent to win, and doing a great job in the transfer portal and all that. But just in the last 3 years, Michigan and Jim Harbaugh have watched Dante Moore, number one quarterback in his class, leave for UCLA, and then in transfer, he didn't want to come back. He went to Oregon. CJ Carr, Lloyd Carr's grandson, left for a 4/5-star quarterback, left for Notre Dame. Now, maybe he just didn't want to play at Michigan, but maybe if it's a different coach, he does. And then Bryce Underwood, the number one recruit, number one quarterback in the class, who's currently a junior, in next year's commit to LSU. Like, Harbaugh and Michigan are not killing it on the recruiting trail on guys that you got to get one of them, right? So, I mean,
it's not a really good. Usually if you say there's three straight five-star franchise QBs year, all in your area, Metro Detroit, and you got none of them, that's usually a sign of a program in duress. Like, that's like, man, that program is struggling. And they didn't go to Ohio State or Michigan. One went to Notre Dame or Michigan State. They went off. They're just like, forget it. So Sherrone Moore could improve their recruiting, which I think gives them a little bit of a chance because maybe they get more elite players that can make up for what I think will be a quite natural, quite forgivable. Not saying anything bad about Sherrone Moore, but you're probably not going to be on day one as good of a coach as Jim Harbaugh at age 60.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point that, yeah, Michigan didn't win the national title the way Georgia and Alabama have recently, which is recruit overwhelming talent and then do a good job with that talent, obviously. But Michigan, it was recruit good talent and make it elite and then execute like crazy, you know, and develop like crazy. And so they, yeah, that there is room to grow off of Harbaugh's recruiting. It's a good point. And all you gotta do is look at Ohio State, which has always recruited better. And maybe you're without Harbaugh, you don't have the developmental advantage, but maybe you can close that gap in terms of just sheer talent that you're bringing in.
Well, the only comparison recently, I guess you could make is Clemson. Like as far as,
yeah.
Yep. Talent, they're not in the top five or top three really during their run. You know, they were probably around 10 or so. And also you could compare actually what Michigan just did to what Clemson did, I guess, with promoting Dabo. He was around the same age. I think he was a little older, maybe 39 or something, 38, whatever. But they were similar of age, and Dabo had never really – I mean, he had been a coordinator maybe for like 1 year, you know, so – and he was similar age and, you know, taking over, you know, a program that had won one national title in X amount of year, you know, 40, 50 years. So it was a little similar there in the way that they've done it too. It's probably pretty similar getting three-star, four-star guys and turning them into better playing as the team. That's a kind of reminds me of that. Of course, I'm sure Michigan fans would hope that things turn out the same and they win, you know, two or three national titles, which Dabo has. But, you know, now we see the latest of what's happening with Clemson. And you wonder about the future of their program, but it does remind me of what Michigan did and how Michigan maybe has built its program as well. It's not so dissimilar to how Clemson has, and very different than the Alabamas and the Georgias. But Dan brings up a good point about how maybe Sherrone does it differently. You know, maybe he can improve the recruiting, and you know, once you do that with the foundation you've had the last few years, you wonder what the ceiling is for the Michigan program.
Yeah. Now, William Christopher Sweeney, he took over he took over little old Clemson and built it, yeah, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I guess I could put it, and I want to not be too tough on this, too tough on third base, Coach Day, Ryan Day, but it's a little similar. He takes over for Ohio State, and it's like, well, I'm going to recruit great players. We already got great players. Or you have to do as good of a job. He has done that. He just... And I don't know. I mean, Ohio State could have won more national titles than, you know, with Urban. But like, are you going to be as good of a coach as Urban Meyer? That's a hard bar to clear.
Yeah.
You know, like there really aren't any better coaches better than Urban Meyer. So if you're 5% down, which I don't think is at all insulting. It's just like, well, there you go. So this, at least Sherrone Moore has got some upside there. So I don't know. I never know where these coaches are going to succeed. I never know.
None
if
of
they're
us
not.
Do.
Crapshoot.
Total crapshoot.
I am the person who gave a D plus grade to Dabo when they hired him at Clemson. So, you know,
I thought Harbaugh would win. It took a long time to do it. I thought Rich Rodriguez would win. That did not ever come out. You know, it's you just sometimes you get these guys and you think it's going to be great. Sometimes it just isn't. Sometimes you're not sure. And here we are. So we wish him luck. And they're going to remain a big deal. I do think it helps that it's not all or nothing anymore for Michigan. Yeah. They also are so happy they won the national title. He's going to get at least a little grace period, at least until the second half of the Texas game, which is week two next year. We'll see how that goes. Okay, so the one thing that is still out there are all these NCAA investigations. There's at least two of them on Michigan into violations. We have the Not a Cheeseburger scandal, kind of dubbed by the NCAA itself, which were the level two violations committed by the program and Jim Harbaugh that morphed into a level one charge against Harbaugh because he was not forthcoming, that they believe. Harbaugh has contended he was forthcoming. I was really looking forward to trying to parse out what the hell constitutes forthcoming with a guy who could barely hold a conversation with anybody. I find him never. I don't know what I don't. I walk out of press conferences, Jim Harbaugh, uncertain what got said at all. So I was really looking forward to that as a side, but we have that. Harbaugh has already served. Now, last summer, the NCAA and the NCAA, I can't remember how it all went down, but the enforcement staff, basically the cops and prosecutors of the NCAA and Michigan and Jim Harbaugh agreed to a plea deal, if you will, of a 4-game suspension. Then the infractions committee, which is kind of the judge, refused to sign off on it and blew up the deal because they kind of insinuated they might want a 6-game suspension of Jim Harbaugh. We all thought that was pretty wild. It kind of showed the animosity here between the NCAA and Jim Harbaugh. So there was no deal was reached that would have put this all in the past. Harbaugh did serve a 3-game suspension, courtesy of the school, and Sherrone Moore served a 1-game suspension. But this case is still out there. So I don't know how you punish Harbaugh anymore. You can't. But would they try to carry over and hit Sherrone Moore up with another game or something? So there's a lot of people out there who are waiting, probably just wishful thinking, a lot of Buckeyes saying Michigan's going to get absolutely hammered here for all of its cases. Okay. So that's one case. The other case, of course, is Connor Stallions and the advanced scouting to steal signs, which has not been adjudicated in any way. Although Harbaugh served a 3-game penalty from the Big Ten, which said the Big Ten said they were punishing the program. Big Ten is a separate jurisdiction of the NCAA. I don't know if the NCAA cares. I don't know whether they should. I don't know how that's going to play out. But we still do not know all of the details of the Connor Stallions investigation. As of now, it appears that they have not discovered some massive link that would go to the coordinator level, up the chain of command or anything like that. All the coaches except for one, and that was really he was blamed for talking to players about the case after or something like that. Who knows? Chris Partridge was fired. Everybody else in the Michigan staff worked. They just gave the job to Sherrone Moore. So obviously Michigan doesn't seem too concerned about it. We have not seen more on that. But something is coming on. I mean, they're going to punish this Connor Stallions deal. As they should. So what would the level of penalty be there? Is that where Michigan is going to get absolutely hammered, or they're going to get this draconian thing that's going to rack the program? Here's my theory. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong. I think the NCAA would love to hammer Michigan. I just don't think they can anymore. They could put a postseason ban on Michigan, but they don't want to do that. They've stated in the past, they've stated they're getting away from that penalty. They don't want to do it. It's not fair to the current players, of which like next year's roster probably be like 40-50% of guys that had already been there, right? They don't seem to want to do that. That's really the only penalty, though, they have in their quiver anymore. They can vacate wins, okay? Maybe that's a little embarrassing, but I don't know that anyone cares. My thing is that if they try to do recruiting penalties, none of the recruiting penalties that the NCAA is able to apply bear any relation to how recruiting works these days. Scholarship limits, visits, days on the road by the coaches, all the different things. It's all about NIL, making deals with agents, acquiring guys through the portal, getting older players. Nobody cares about your freshman year grants, all of these things. And so even if the NCAA wanted to put all of the penalties they have at their disposal onto Michigan, the way they maybe they did with USC or some of the other schools, most of them won't have any real impact on the programs. The idea that Michigan is going to get absolutely blasted, I don't know if they even can blast them because the penalties are as outdated as the rule book is at this point. What do you think? That makes sense? Did I explain that right? It was long.
Yeah, no. It's an interesting theory. And I don't know what the answer will be. I think scholarship limits would still matter. Don't you? I mean, if you take away 12 scholarships,
Don't give them to freshmen.
Depends on your NIL program. Yeah. And how lucrative it is, I guess.
I guess so. But
so you have a small freshman class, but you have a 13-man freshman class.
But you can't bring in transfer. I mean, scholarship limit's a scholarship limit, right? I mean, if you can only have 75 guys on scholarship instead of 85.
We just don't take 70. Fresh, but you still load up with seniors.
Well, but okay. The scholarship's got to come from somewhere.
I would say your freshman class.
Maybe so. And eventually, I think.
But you can make that up. You just always have low freshman classes.
You could. So that I we'll see. I sure think they would like.
I mean, it's not great, but I don't think it's like.
No, they'd like
to
get a guy like Mason Graham as a freshman come in, you know, a couple of years ago. And if you don't have scholarships to give a Mason Graham, then that's to your detriment. As far as the postseason ban, that is probably going to be where the rubber meets the road unless they apply a coach suspension that was supposed to be a Harbaugh suspension is now just the Michigan head coach suspension, and then it becomes Sharon Moore and he's out for 6 games or whatever. I think that would be a tough one. That would be a tough one to apply, but
if you're doing it because this guy was less than forthcoming and it wasn't this
right
guy, it's like,
yeah, I know, but also head coach responsibility is the other factor there that comes into play more with the Stallions case.
Can you do that if he wasn't the head coach?
Yeah, like retroactive. I don't know that would fly.
Yeah,
I think it's difficult. So postseason ban is kind of where the action could be, would be. And they flat out let Tennessee off the hook last year.
For a price.
Like $7 million or $9 million or whatever the price.
They're just saving $8 million on not having Harbaugh or $7 million right there. They'll pay that. Mm-hmm. You can find Michigan all you want. They ain't going to care.
Yeah.
That's a blank.
But, so, I mean, I remember getting on the conference call and being told, no, we do still have that as a penalty. And a matter of fact, they said at the NCAA convention, you know, Ross went to one NCAA seminar. I went to another one. I don't know where they said it in Ross's, but in mine, they said, yes, the postseason ban is still a penalty that can be applied. Will they? I don't know. They avoided it with a case that they absolutely flat out said was one of the worst cases they'd ever seen. So it would seem difficult to walk that back. Although Kay Norton, who was the chair of that committee, said, you know, we're waiting for clearance and guidance from NCAA membership on how you feel about postseason bans. And maybe that will change. But maybe it won't. So that's going to be the part of it, I think, that really will be fascinating. Harbaugh leaving does probably give the head coach a chance to coach most of the season. I think if he had been there, he would have been out at least 6 games, if not the whole thing.
Yeah, and the NCAA, as far as the investigation with the advanced scouting, the NCAA had been you know, waiting for the season to end, or I should say Michigan coaches had been waiting for the season to end to talk to the NCAA. And it was one of the things that was dragging that investigation. Good luck talking to Jim Harbaugh now, right? Like,
yeah,
that's not happening.
Right?
Like, he's not, not that he would say anything anyway, but he's certainly not talking to you now. And those who, Jesse Minter, why would he?
Yep.
I mean, he's going to be the Chargers defensive coordinator. Why would he
talk? There was some thought about that, about it might be a good time for Jesse Minter to also turn pro.
Yeah. So I'm assuming a lot of this. I've not talked to anybody in Indianapolis that has said any of this, but I assume that this just further angers the NCAA and the people running the investigation, that the people potentially at the center of this are leaving town. And you do have to wonder if they are going to put the responsibility on others who are still there, like Sharon. And you wonder that, even if they don't have any evidence at all, or very little evidence to connect the staff members to Connor Stallions and in the whole advanced scouting scheme. So obviously the postseason ban is the big one, but sure, like, you could see maybe the NCAA trying to do something when it comes to, you know, head coach responsibility and suspension there. And that would be hard because he wasn't the head coach at the time. If you look at the Tennessee case, obviously the Tennessee case and the Michigan case are not the same when it came to the dead period recruiting. Tennessee did coaches did much more serious allegations, violations that were proven, I think, and there was evidence there to prove them.
I mean, they're paying for recruits to come on to the campus.
Right.
They were literally handing over bags of cash
come and visit.
Right. Right. And
we're down the restaurant, whatever. That case to me, that one to me is like, they're level two violations. And then Harbaugh lied. Are you really going to punish Sharon Moore because Harbaugh lied, if he lied?
Well, that's a big question. And the NCAA are going to say, well, you know what? Your coach left, so we got to punish the school some way. So here's how we're going to punish the school. We're not letting you get away with it because your coach left.
That's a tricky one. It is.
It very much is. But
I don't doubt that they want to do it.
Yeah.
I guess my thing is, could they come up with a way to suspend Sharon Moore for a couple more games? Probably. I think they're going to have to be very creative on how to do that.
Yeah.
But they want to suspend him for two or three games to start his tenure. Okay. Let's say it's that. I don't even think they can get that done, but let's say they do. Other than a postseason ban, what can they do to Michigan that will hurt Michigan? There's a lot of fans out there for fair reason who want to see Michigan pay, right? They think Michigan cheated, and they cheated for years, and they should be penalized and punished and hit them up. Okay. I'm not going to argue with that sentiment. I just don't know that the NCAA, as it is currently built, can even, other than a postseason ban, do one thing to a school that can actually hurt them. A school like Michigan.
Right.
Their penalties are all recruiting restrictions. And recruiting restrictions don't matter anymore. Deion Sanders never leaves his office. Days on the road? Like, it's these. Julian Seyin picked a school in 11 hours. You know, like, it's. What do you got?
Right.
Like, I just don't think I think the old penalty structure was built for 6 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And you go, look, we're going to, next couple years, 10 scholarships down, next two recruiting classes. You're only at 75 scholarships, whatever it is. They're losing 44 guys this year. And they're I just don't think any of these penalties. Whoever's wishing that there's going to be this huge bombshell, we just laid the hammer down on Michigan. I don't think they have a hammer anymore because the game has changed. No one's looking to, there's no nails to hammer.
Well, and schools are not fearing the NCAA any longer, right? Like the Tennessee case is a great example. I think like 5 years ago, certainly like 10 plus years ago, Tennessee gets a postseason ban. Like they would have gotten
that was a bad case. Two years ago.
Yeah. There you go.
That case is 10, 6, 7 years ago. That was a bad case.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be nothing.
I think Tennessee, like a lot of schools, threatened the NCAA with legal action, right? Probably during the process and said, and I think that's happened quite a bit. There's a lot of legal action going on and legal challenges going on. And I think Florida State on the NIL, their punishment for NIL matters. I think there was a threat of legal action as well. Didn't transpire in either case, but you could see Michigan and it's many lawyers, including a lot that are probably on that board or boosters doing the same thing. I mean, with all this, I mean, I would imagine
one guy because another guy lied.
Well, okay.
Right.
So
that's a harsh, right? That's the case. Right. So, but I don't even care about a couple game suspension. Would that even hurt the program?
I don't know. That's now one thing we'll see. If we've had a big brain drain off of this staff and the next staff isn't as good, then you suspend the head coach. It could actually have a significant penalty.
Okay. They lose one of the three games.
Yeah.
But the program's not going to go reeling. That's what I'm saying.
Right. So, but one other factor here. In terms of, yes, like you can almost dismiss the first case, but the second case, the Stallions case. We don't know for sure how the NCAA is going to charge it, but logic seems to dictate they're going to charge it as major violations, level
absolutely,
one.
Absolutely.
Then the question is, okay, what exactly happened with Chris Partridge, the assistant coach there? Because if Michigan's stance has been Connor Stallions was a rogue actor in a vacuum, what was Chris Partridge's implication there? And then who else, especially on the defensive staff, if it was a defensive thing, and no, Jesse Minter might be a good time to go coach the Chargers. You know, if this thing goes up the ladder, I think it escalates the risk for some sort of major program punishments there. But okay, we don't know.
Other than a postseason ban,
I would guess that would be on the table for sure.
I think it would be on the table.
3 years of major one violations or whatever. Would a postseason ban would definitely be on the table. I was talking to some former NCAA investigators who we've written this, but told me that like that almost certainly is on the table because these would be considered level one major violations. I mean, look what the NCAA thought it was egregious enough to, for the first time that I can remember, right, open up, quote, right, their vault of evidence in the middle of a season for a conference in a school to look at and then levy penalties. So, yeah, it will be a postseason ban. I think that's the answer. But I've got a solution also.
They do not want to do postseason bans.
And they don't.
You want to pull the membership, i.e. Fox and ESPN. So they have to make that move. I agree. They could come out and say, I'm not arguing against the punishment. If they want to come out and say, hey, you guys are postseason banned, I can't imagine being more than 1 year.
No. But,
okay.
No.
Probably not. But, yeah, probably not.
But
yeah.
I think that is the only penalty that would have any tangible impact on Michigan. Now, they may drop back because they no longer have Jim Harbaugh. They may drop back because a million, like you said, the staff isn't as good. Sharon Moore needs to grow into it. I have no idea. But my point is just, I think it's you can cheat all you want because other than a postseason ban, there isn't one thing in their arsenal that has any impact if you're a major program like Michigan football. 10 scholarships? Whatever. We'll just concentrate on the portal.
Yeah, I think you got to give the portal kids scholarships too.
Yeah, but you can get
a smaller talent pool.
Slightly,
that's where
NIL
comes in.
It's
right?
Not, like, yeah. Right. You get walk-ons. It's not the same as it used to be.
No, I agree. I'm not arguing that point with you.
That used to be a big deal. Recruiting off campus, all those things did work. Now it doesn't. Most of these schools aren't at 85 scholarships anyway. And all you sit there saying, that's all right. Next year's recruiting class will only have 16 kids. We'll just load up with more older kids. some of our second part of our freshman class we won't bother with. I don't think it matters. So I'm just arguing in general. Michigan's the case. But unless they reassess how they penalize programs, I don't know that there's anything the NCAA can really do that penalizes the University of Michigan. They could ban them from a postseason for 1 year. That would be a massive step, and they've said they don't want to do that anymore. Or they could try to apply Jim Harbaugh's penalties to Sharon Moore. Lawyer up. I mean, if I'm Sharon Moore, of course I'm fighting that. I didn't do it. That's the other guy. He lied. I'm not him. So, and even then, what are we talking? Let's say they give a 2 or 3 game. There's people out there who are like, they're going to hammer Michigan and Michigan's going to fall back. And I'm like, they may fall back, but it's not because the NCAA's. I just don't think they have the quiver. I think,
Well, here's a good penalty. Here's a good penalty. Okay, we'll take one. Something from the people's court that we often do. What if the NCAA in Michigan agreed to a resolution and it's a tit for tat situation? You allegedly cheated in an advanced scouting sign stealing scheme for at least 2 years and maybe 3+. So now for the next year, one coach from each school you play gets to attend your practices. How about that? How about that? There you go.
That would be fascinating.
Open up practice. All the coaches in the country.
I'd like to see the Ohio State coach walk in with armed security.
Yeah, it's right. Like, yeah.
That would probably be a better penalty than whatever they're going to come up with.
Yeah, yeah.
That would actually be pretty cool. Practices are open. Come on in. Come on in, Indiana. Like, that would be fairer than being like, well, you're only good. Your official visit tally will go from 65 to 45. Okay, fine. I make an NIL deal with the MDen bookstore to come in as a recruit, and they pay for me to fly up there. Like, I mean, these penalties, I'm just saying, the rules, the penalties that are out there are just like slap on the wrist. It might hurt a lower program, but not Michigan. And if you hit them with a bunch of penalties, the boosters will just give more money. They'll be fired up like they are in Ohio right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating resolution, this.
Is there anything these guys can do anymore? I don't know. Maybe. I'm trying to think of it. That's my thing. I was looking through it. I'm like, oh, they can really hit them with scholarships. That's not going to matter. So, you know, and you could just up the ante to where it doesn't matter. I mean, Ohio State, their fans have just mobilized this year. Yeah. They're like, Ohio State's recruiting class was done, and then they added a whole bunch of dudes. Like, I don't know. This is great. You know, there's like, I feel bad for some of these kids in Ohio. Their dad's a big fan. Like, it's like, Dad, are we going to Cedar Point this summer? You know, when are we going up there to ride the roller coasters? Your father had to give $6,500. So we got some Ole Miss running back, even though we already had Travion Henderson.
They had to give $6,500 more to keep Travion Henderson and Emeka Ogbuka.
Yeah. Connor Stallions cheated. We have to show those cheaters. Play with some sidewalk chalk all summer. Municipal pool. Cedar Point's overrated. I mean, these poor kids. No summer vacation for you.
That's it. The summer vacations are off in the state of Ohio.
We're out. We're out of money. Budget's a little blown. Community college for a year. Then you can go off. I don't know. All right. I'm scared to broach this topic because I feel that someday I may be canceled.
Uh-oh.
Or even mentioning it.
Uh-oh.
I feel like I might be canceled. I don't know. Like, there are people in the 1930s that said words that you look back, oh, you shouldn't have said that word. But, you know, it's like 100 years later. I'm treading on it here. This could be it. This could be my last podcast.
I was going to say, you might be canceling all of our podcasts. What are you doing?
I will say it. I am Jim Harbaugh. You guys are Sharon Moore. You don't know what I'm being. Horns down.
Oh, man. Do we need to bleep that out? Sean, we might need to, we know it for FCC reasons. That might be a FCC violation now.
Horns down. I don't know.
That's an attack.
Okay. horns down has gone off the rails. It was bad enough before with the football, but now the basketball, Rodney Terry, the basketball program is out of control. The kids at Central Florida beat Texas. They celebrate with the horns down. He goes crazy in the layup line, and there's a whole press conference lecturing about class and being a good sportsman and how disrespectful this is. And then Central Florida agrees. Some kids at BYU last weekend dressed up in coordinated shirts and spelled out horns down, and BYU made them take off the shirts. Okay, they gave them other shirts because we don't need a bunch of Jason Kelsey's out there. We are now at the point, it's bad enough when the snowflakes in Austin could not handle the concept of horns down, which is the stupidest thing ever. But you other people are now empowering them and making it sound like it's reasonable that this is an offensive term. It is not. Cancel culture cannot live.
It's become like a curse word. All of a sudden, it's been added to the curse word dictionary. Horns down.
Horns
right up
down.
There with F you.
Freedom of speech. Put me on Newsmax or something. Where I don't know. What is going on? Horns down is not a hate speech. It's just a joke.
What are they going to see in the SEC? When you were younger, you used to pick on somebody, or they used to pick on you, whatever they were picking on you about, if you showed them that it hurt you, guess what they're going to keep on doing?
Picking on
you about it. And it's exactly what we have here. Like, Texas is being publicly stopped picking on me. This hurts me. Well, guess what's going to happen when they move to the SEC? Every freaking stadium, they might even pop a. What do they do? What do the Rose Bowl do now with the stuff in the sky with the little robots?
Oh, the drones.
What the hell they call
horns
the
down.
Drones. They're gonna have drones say horns down over Bryant-Denny Stadium when Texas comes in.
The engineering club will do it just to harass them, right? Let's get all our drones and spell horns down. Good, go for it. What is happening, Pat?
No, it's pretty impressive that somehow poor little old Texas, fragile, tiny, impoverished, you know, humble Texas, now is like an endangered species. Like, they have to be protected, you know? Like, we can't harm the horns. We can't do it. It's a remarkable feat that they've achieved, that they've somehow managed to make themselves this fragile. And now we're in need of institutional protection from their competitors. The thing with the T-shirts at BYU, truly, that boggled my mind. It's like, okay, if Rodney Terry wants to go off, which was dumb, but if he wants to, fine. And he did end up actually apologizing kind of for it. But, like, you can't wear shirts that spell out horns down now? Holy moly. What are we doing, Big 12? Toughen up. Let's get the mean back, especially Texas is leaving. Who cares if you insult them? Who cares if you hurt their feelings? You should. They're leaving you. Do it.
That's just not us, Coach Mark Pope said. It's not how we roll. Well, it should be. BYU, I think it is how you roll. It's a tough place to play up there at the old Marriott Center.
I've heard that other things have been done and said at BYU that were not particularly welcoming to visitors, so...
I'm trying to think of other insults that, you know, one college has against the other, who would be like, which would be in this realm. I mean, like, I can remember being at Mississippi State and, like, you know, Cal College, right, was something used against State, and people, you know, had signs and stuff for it. I mean, you know, the SEC didn't make a rule that you couldn't call Mississippi State fans, you know, students of Cal colleges. Like, what are we doing?
I mean,
corn dogs with LSU, right?
Nobody's trying to outlaw the corn dog.
LSU smells like corn dog water,
right,
or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Circus. It all goes back to the circus. You know, I mean, like, it's just bizarre. And I can't imagine when they move in the SEC that SEC presidents are going to sit around and feel sorry for Texas and, you know, vote or do whatever the Big 12 had done years ago, which is to punish teams for doing this signal. I just, that's not going to happen.
No.
All right. Final story. Former LSU wide receiver, currently playing for the Patriots, Kayshawn Boutte. Got busted for creating an online betting account under a fake name and then placing more than 8,900 illegal bets.
The fake name. Danny, you read the fake name?
What was it?
Read the name he came up with. Kayshawn Booty 07 was the was one of the names. So really, the other one really was Kayshawn tricky. Booty 1 or something. I mean, what are we doing?
Tricky, dude.
So how is that even a fake name?
Yeah, it's not, it wasn't. He wasn't masking much there.
Well, good job by the Louisiana State Police to crack that one.
Yeah.
At least 17 of the bets are on NCAA football games. Grace for the case fan, Kayshawn Boutte. Six were on LSU, and two were believed to be in games he played in. One was about him getting a certain number of receiving yards he didn't get. Never bet against LSU, never was throwing games. He won more than $500,000, which he used to bet more.
And then lost it.
Then lost it.
That's what tends to happen, right?
Yeah, it tends to happen. He deposited a total of $132,000 in the account. He won $556,000, but then made more bets. He only withdrew $50,000, so he's down overall $82,000 he lost gambling. Be careful out there. All of us are as skilled as the Race for the Case people.
Glad we're spending this NIL money correctly, you know, wisely. Perfect. $100,000 of NIL money, LSU booster money lost to the bookies.
Anyway, got a felony charge of computer fraud and a misdemeanor count. I'm sure to get worked out, and he stops gambling. I don't know. Thoughts, anyone?
Well, you know what's the popular saying now in sports is bet on yourself. Well, he did. Unfortunately, he didn't win that prop on himself. Darn it.
Bet on myself.
Yeah, I think it was part of like an 8-leg parlay for his catches in the Florida State game or something, right? And people were going back and finding
parlay.
Yeah, I think so. But I know when you were like 19 and 20, Pat, right? You made some good decisions. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Me, I think I did some eight-leg parlays too in college. Yeah, totally. Not on myself, but I think people were going back to the game against Florida State where he bet on himself to get the over of catches. I don't remember what it was, but he didn't get it, and you could. You know, there were videos, people putting two and two together of him on the sideline, visibly upset, maybe more angry than he was in other games.
Yeah.
You know, LSU fans that were, I think, always scratching their head about why Kayshawn Boutte had such a drop off from his freshman year. You know, obviously, betting as much as he did in on what he was doing, You got to think he wasn't in a great mental place.
It's a lot of bets, man. It's a lot of bets. It's like dozens a day, right?
Yeah. You can do the math. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yikes. Oh, and especially like college football players are busy on Saturdays. What else is he betting on? If he's betting other college games.
He's betting a bunch of other stuff.
Other stuff. Yeah.
Right. But
he only bets so many college football. He's more into everything else, so he's probably betting a lot of NBA. I don't know. Yeah, when you bet, it is one of the things about the gambling when you're young is because I remember the first time I went to a horse track, I tried to pull some, like, I'll bet $2 on these five winners, you know, $2 each, and I'll win like a, you know. It's like, dude, you're not going to win five straight. I'm sure when I handle that in, they're like, thanks for the money. Thanks for the 10, because you ain't got a shot. You're not picking five consecutive winners.
No.
Yeah, you make some dumb moves, so he obviously did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Kayshawn Boutte, 07. He's a Piper. Just don't – when you're playing, just don't – it was funny. Jameson Williams, the Detroit Lion, former Alabama, Ohio State player, he missed the beginning of this year for a gambling suspension because he bet, like, NBA while logged in at the team facility. And then he was involved in catching the last touchdown that was a backdoor cover for the Lions. Everyone got all fired up
in the NFC Championship game. They're like, wait a minute, what is going on? Caught the ball was thrown to him. All right,
If he bet on himself, I'm sure he won because he had two touchdowns. So he must have cleared his prop.
Hopefully he did not bet on the NFL, or else, he's in a lot of trouble. Anyway, careful out there, kids. That's our show. We got a lot of other stuff we didn't even get to, but we will talk more later this week. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, and we appreciate you. Talk to you later.